Some subjects are not easy to talk about, and I'm going to have a go at this one. I hope I get it right. I hope you'll bear with me a little bit if I don't quite, but I do think it is a subject that is important to talk about. So the subject is trusting our community. And I'd like to start by just mentioning a headline that covered the front of the Courier Mail, I think it was yesterday, and it said, "Sex Predator File of Shame." Now, of course, a headline like this makes very good headlines. It puts fear into people. It's very alarmist, and it sells newspapers more than anything else. Does this mean that our community is full of sex predators? How on earth does it apply to us? Well, I get across my desk the police crime statistics, the local what crimes have happened. I think they come through weekly, actually. And I keep updating them on our security part of the Transition the Grove website. And the thing that's really noticeable about those crime statistics is how few crimes are committed locally, and most of them are very simple little crimes, things like graffiti, a little bit of break and enter, that sort of thing. We did have one sexual, I guess you'd call them a predator, operating over quite a wide area. That was the person who attacked women who out on forest walking paths and things like that. And the police instigated quite a long-term major hunt for that person, and they believe they have him, and I think he's probably now in jail. Apart from that case, I have not come across any statistics on this. I have to say, I have not been down and asked our chief of police down at the Ferny Grove Police Station for information about sexual predators in this area, whether there are any known ones living amongst us. Part of me thinks that it would probably be quite hard to get that information from them. It's not a question I'm hanging out to ask. But on the other side, I have a sense that it's not actually a huge problem. I would be pretty surprised to discover that we had a huge number of people with any sorts of convictions on sexual matters living amongst us. I probably wouldn't be so surprised if it turned out in our whole valley that there were one or two. I could imagine that would be possible. However, almost all of us are subject to the requirement to have blue cards if we do just about anything with children. And let's be clear that somebody is defined as being a child if they are under the age of 18 years. And a person who is maybe 17 might be physically the size of an adult. They could even be taller than an adult. But they are still defined as a child. And blue cards need to be perennially renewed. I think I heard that they are now renewing them 3 yearly. I know that I've had one renewed a number of times, and that was every 2 years. And it seems like a major job. It's not a small requirement to have this continually being required, except during a relatively brief period when our own children are young enough for us to fall into a category defined as parents. And although you're still a parent when you're older, if you've got more grown-up children, what is really being meant here is, for example, at schools or kindergartens or things, if somebody has a a child who is of school age or kindergarten age, something like that. So parents during these brief years have some special rights in our community. And those rights include things like being given an unstated permission to relate in a normal, straightforward way with young people. And they can do things like go and help out in schools without being required to get a blue card. So they might do things like help in the canteen or something like that, help with reading in the schools. And they have a right to be trusted without any questions about their trustworthiness to work with children. By contrast, everyone else in the community has an unstated shadow cast over them. And for most of us, providing we have no contact with people under the age of 18, it's not obvious, but it is still there. If our paths ever cross the paths of young people, the restriction can kick in rather harshly. And it's usually regarded as being for the protection of the young people. But actually, I think older people have come to regard the bigger danger as actually being incurred by older people, because it's very easy for older people to have slurs or suspicions cast on them, and it can be extremely damaging. And so many older people are choosing to just keep a distance, and they're getting quite resentful about the continual requirement for things like blue cards if they volunteer. I know in some places, some like one of the local community centres, that's pretty well only has older adults going to it, but it has got a children's playground in the yard, and so the people going there have to have blue cards, this sort of thing. If you talk to parents of young children, like school-age children, especially young children, kindergarten, primary school age, this sort of thing, they seem to have a very high level of anxiety about predators. I don't think it would be possible to overstate how troubled they are by the potential risk to their children. And they certainly treat it very seriously indeed. In fact, they treat it, treating the whole community as potential predators seems to them, I'd say, like a necessary step to be taken to protect their children. It's as if our parents have been convinced that they cannot trust any adults in the community in regard to their children. Any of us might be predators. And this, I think, is a terrible thing. That we have a situation where our normal community relations are so destroyed by this concept of sexual predation. On the side of institutions like our schools, there are much more formal and absolute barriers. So anyone having any contact with students in a school, if you know anybody from the community, is starting to have to surmount some very high bureaucratic barriers, and they might actually find it impossible. And from the school side, schools very often talk about wanting to have links with the community, but it's much less clear that they set out systematically to develop those links, and they can regard the community with quite a lot of suspicion. We went along to an open day at one of the schools recently, and it was extremely good. The young people there were doing great work. There was a lot of good stuff happening. but it wasn't possible, for example, to share any of that by, say, radio interviews. I did ask if I could have permission and was very firmly told no, that I would have to apply in advance to get permission of the parents for their children to be interviewed, and that obviously wasn't possible. And in fact, bureaucratically, it would have been an absolutely insurmountable barrier. And yet I can go around the community and ask anybody over the age of 18 if they would like to do a radio interview. And it's a very simple, straightforward thing. And they say yes. Now, I certainly think it's a real shame that this massive problem of trust in our community exists in relation to this whole thing, the whole thing of communications between people under 18 and over 18. Because there's so much potential for schools and the community to work together. Now, for example, a few visions of what could be possible, and some of these I've actually picked up from things I saw in the Open Day the other day. Statues and public art. Our young people in schools are producing some wonderful artworks. Our parks and public places around the Grove are fairly culturally supplied with things like public art statues compared, say, to the city, where there's a lot of statues of very good quality. It would be great if our schools worked with the community to provide public art, public statues. And this would be a project that could happen very well. One of the things I saw the other day was a project that's happening inside the school to do with litter control. So that it's done as a GIS, Graphical Information Systems project, where the students have mapped the whole school. They've collected data on the litter, the number of pieces of litter in each of the different bits of the school. And then they have mapped those and they have worked out a program to control the, so they've been able to identify the really areas where the litter is very intense, and they've worked out how to control and manage that. Now, that sort of project could be expanded right across our community very effectively, but that would need school and community cooperation. Another area is food gardens, and there is some cooperation happening here, but there's a lot of potential for the community to work with schools to have food gardens. The schools need to get some of the gardens in their sites managed without having to pay a whole lot of money to gardeners to do it. The community has the interest and resources, and the food that's produced could be shared. And another thing, our schools have the facilities, they have all the buildings for learning environments. Our community is poorly served for ongoing adult learning. They're having a rich ongoing adult learning environment in a community makes a very big difference to the richness of our community life. This is one of the ingredients in making a community a really fascinating, terrific place to be, when there's a lot of ongoing adult learning courses happening. Certainly I've experienced it in some communities in the past, where the schools are used at night time for community classes. I know I did pottery in one, woodwork in another, and you know, there's just heaps of potential for that. So working on this dimension of trust, how do we identify whether there is a real problem of danger to our young people? How do we manage it in a way that doesn't treat the whole community as somehow suspect of something that they're not guilty of? Most people, nearly everybody in this community, are terrific people, absolutely decent to the core. And that needs to be respected. We deeply need to respect the goodness of each other, the goodness of the people we live among.